Now we begin chapter 5, Bhagavad Gita, Karma Yoga, Action, and Krishna Consciousness. So Bhurijan Prabhu writes as the connecting factor between the two chapters. Arjuna is still confused, though he has heard transcendental knowledge from Krishna. In text 16 through 18 of the fourth chapter, Krishna glorified jnana and spoke of action and inaction, and inaction and action. In text 41, Krishna glorified both jnana and renunciation. Then in text 42, he again ordered Arjuna to fight. Therefore, chapter 5 opens with a question similar to the one Arjuna asked at the beginning of chapter 3, which is better, work or renunciation of work? So then we begin the first group of verses. Is where Krishna explains that Nishkam Karma Yoga is easier and better than renouncing work, in texts 1 through 6. Arjuna said, "First of all, you asked me to renounce work, and then again you recommend work with devotion. Now will you kindly tell me definitively which of the two is more beneficial?" The personality of Godhead replied, "The renunciation of work and work in devotion are both good for liberation. But of the two, work in devotional service is better than renunciation of work. One who neither hates nor desires the fruits of his activities is known to be always renounced. Such a person, free from all dualities, easily overcomes material bondage and completely liberated, and is completely liberated, O mighty Arjuna. Only the ignorant speak of devotional service, karma yoga, as being different from the analytical study of the material world, Shankhya. Those who are actually learned say that he who applies himself well to one of these paths achieves the results of both. One who knows that the position reached by means of analytical study can also be attained by devotional service, and who therefore sees analytical study and devotional service to be on the same level, sees things as they are. Merely renouncing all activities, yet not engaging in the devotional service of the Lord, cannot make one happy. But a thoughtful person engaged in devotional service can achieve the supreme without delay." So what's happening is that Arjuna is thinking that there are two different things: renunciation of work and karma yoga, what Krishna is saying, or devotional service. He's seeing them as two different things, completely, you know, not connected to each other. And because of this, he's confused. Because generally when you look at something, then you're either into it, so you do something, or you renounce it. But what Krishna is talking about is not the renunciation, external renunciation, but it's the internal renunciation, or the mentality. So that is what he's asking. When he always talks renounced, this is what he's meaning. You give up the desire for the fruit. That is renounced. Generally you think the fruit of worker, he's only working because he's going to get a result. He's not working just because he thinks work is great. He's working because he gets result. So the whole idea is that one still works, but without attachment to the result. Then one is detached. That is the detached worker. So this is, actually there's no difference. Because such a person on that platform, he can either do his work with no attachment, or in time even give up the work and he still has no attachment. So it's Krishna saying, of the two, working in devotion with detachment is better. Because once you've given up the desire of thinking, feeling, willing, once you've given up that, then nothing happens. So there's no reaction. You're acting without desire, then there's no reaction. And if you renounce the work, then supposedly there's no reaction. But unless one has given up the desire for results, you know, material results, a reaction is there. Therefore, action in inaction. And if you've given up results in action, then that's inaction. Because there's no results accruing. Also, another aspect comes out is that you have one and the other. So it's like this. I'm saying that one thought is that I give up my attachments to the spiritual world. Right? I renounce the material world. I renounce the activities, the results, everything like that. Because I see it as a problem. Right? It's a difficulty. It's not us. We're the soul. We're different from the material body. We're different from the material world. I renounce it. It's a place of misery. Right? The other is, I attach myself to Krishna. Right? I'm attaching myself to Krishna. And working for Krishna. So then, one may say, Krishna says, only the ignorant speak of these two as separate. Because if we're attaching ourselves to Krishna, naturally we have to detach ourselves from the material world. And if you detach yourself from the material world but don't attach yourself to Krishna, then what's the use? But if someone who's intelligent or sincere, when they detach themselves from the material world, they have to do something. So then naturally, if they have good association, they attach themselves to Krishna. But of the two, we can see that doing devotional service for Krishna, trying to attach oneself to Krishna is better. Because automatically the goal is seen and one's endeavoring for the ultimate result. While detaching oneself simply from the material world, there is the chance that one may not attach oneself to Krishna. So of the two, renunciation of work or devotional service is the best. Because when you attach yourself to Krishna, you naturally detach yourself from the material world, if you have knowledge. If you don't, then it may just be sentiment. Prabhupada says, religion without philosophy is sentiment. It may be nice, it's directed towards Krishna, of course, will advance. Krishna says even the smallest something, it's real. But one is not going to dynamically progress, because without knowledge, then one gets caught up, one gets bewildered or confused. I'm doing the service and that, but then so many things are happening to the body and so many disturbances and, I'm getting sick or lack of facilities or so many things are happening to me and but I thought spiritual life is perfect. We're talking about the ultimate perfection. And so one gets bewildered and one may get displaced, temporarily from devotional service. And the other we see is knowledge, or philosophy without religion is mental speculation. So the jnanis, they renounce work, but they don't have any religious process in which they're connecting themselves to the Lord. So it becomes mental speculation. They have no religion. I mean, they follow their detachment, but it's not so dynamic. It's just on the platform of the soul they have to. So in other words, they'd have to detach themselves from the material nature, see the evils of that, see that there's a spirit soul, and then take up bhakti from the platform of Brahma-Bhuta, like the four Kumaras. They're just moving around. They're jnanis. They have no interest in the material nature. But they're doing no service. Then they come in contact with the Lord, they take up pure devotional service. Yeah, so that's rare. We don't hear a lot of them. Right? You hear that with Sukadev and the four Kumaras, and that's all we hear about. We don't hear of others in the Bhagavatam who are on this platform endeavoring for Brahman. Like Kasyapa. You don't hear of him becoming a pure unalloyed devotee, taking up pure devotional service. Like that. You just don't hear it. So, yeah. So the devotional process includes both. Means initiation actually is these two steps here. Right? I mean, part of the process of initiation is this. In the Panchasamskar, the five elements of initiation, the first element is mudra. Mudra means the neck beats. Or it's also called tapa, because sometimes it is accomplished by branding. So it's called tapa then. Otherwise, for us, we generally call it mudra, because we use the neck beats. It signifies that you have understood the material world is a place of suffering. Right? Material world is a place of misery. It is not a place fit for a gentleman. So you detach yourself from it. Right? And to show the sign of that, then one wears the neck beads or one brands oneself with the Shankha Chakra. So that's the first step. Then the second step is okay, you've given up the material world, now we're active by nature. If we think we're inactive, it means we don't have full knowledge. We understand we're Brahman, but unless we understand Brahman is also active, because we're Sat Chit Ananda. See, the Brahmavadis only understand that they are Sat. They don't actually understand Chit and Ananda. So because of that, they think they'll be satisfied in the Brahman. So you have to do something. So now what you will do? You won't do material activities, that's been given up. So one must take the upward path of spiritual activities. It means there must be the goal of going towards the Supreme. So that is called the Urdhva Gati, the upward path, the upward goal. Right? So this is signified by the Urdhva Kundara, or the Tilak. So by wearing the neck beads and the tilak, this then signifies someone who's understood that the material world is a place of misery, and they've chosen to take up the spiritual path of going back to Godhead. That is the first two elements of initiation, and which culminates in further identifying oneself as Krishna's servant, receiving the name as a servant of Krishna, or one of Krishna's devotee, receiving the holy name. So then one then is engaged then in the process of devotional service, and then worship of the deity with mantra and all the, according to the rules and regulations. So we see that this element is an essential point. It's not separate. So therefore Krishna says only the ignorant speak of them as two different things. You know, we see the neck beads and the tilak go together. When we see a devotee, we expect to see both. So that signifies giving up the material nature and attaching yourself to Krishna. In other words, this process of detachment, the process of attachment. So we emphasize the attachment. That naturally means you detach. Right? You naturally detach. Like that, Gurijan gives the example here that, let's say you have one thing in your hand. He says you have a rock in your hand. And then you want to pick something else up. You'll naturally drop the rock and then you'll pick up the other thing. So if you take up devotional service, you naturally drop material activities. So the renunciation or detachment from the material nature is included in this karma yoga, this nishkam karma. You've given up. You have to drop one to do the other. But we see because it's complete, because it has the attachment to the Lord. And that is what we're looking for. We're in the material world because we're attached. Because of our attachment to the senses and the mind and, you know, whatever we have, that keeps us here. So if we just give that up, it's not positive. But if we change that from attachment to ourselves to attachment to Krishna, and doing what we're doing for Krishna, then we get a good result. So that's why Krishna then recommends, of the two, then work with detachment is better than renunciation of work. Then the next section is how one performs this nishkam karma after now Krishna has recommended that, he's answered the question of the two, which is better. Now he's going to say how you apply that. So that's verses 7 to 12. One who works in devotion, who is a pure soul, and who controls his mind and senses, is dear to everyone, and everyone is dear to him. Though always working, such a man is never entangled. A person in the divine consciousness, although engaged in seeing, hearing, touching, smelling, eating, moving about, sleeping, and breathing, always knows within himself that he actually does nothing at all, because while speaking, evacuating, receiving, or opening and closing his eyes, he always knows that only the material senses are engaged with their objects and that he is aloof from them. One who performs his duty without attachment, surrendering the results unto the Supreme Lord, is unaffected by sinful action, as the lotus leaf is untouched by water. The yogis, abandoning attachment, act with the body, mind, intelligence, and even with the senses, only for the purpose of purification. The steadily devoted soul attains unadulterated peace, because he offers the result of all activities to me. Whereas a person who is not in union with the divine, who is greedy for the fruits of his labor, becomes entangled. So here Krishna uses the word sarva-bhutatma bhutatma. So the Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he says that this is vishuddha, a soul with purified intelligence, vijitatma, one who is self-controlled, and jatendriya, one who has conquered his senses. So when one has these three qualities, then one understands things as they are. Otherwise, the impersonalists try to say that this compassion for all souls, which is the meaning of sarva bhutatma bhutatma, the Mayavadis try to say, well, that means you become the soul of everybody. You know? So it's not interesting, I'm a soul, I'm going to become everybody's soul. But somehow or another, the next person, they're going to become my soul. So it's not a well thought out philosophy, but whatever. It pleases those who are not interested in religious processes, but in mental speculation. So So now we see here, this is how it is worked. It's an important element that's being brought in here, what Krishna mentions before. So one works in devotion, pure soul, controls the mind and senses. But here, is dear to everyone and everyone is dear to him. Right? Is that we see all the living entities as parts and parcels of Krishna. Because when you see, we discussed this before, when you see yourself, then you see that everybody else is like this. So when you see, endeavor to see the Supreme, which Prabhupada mentions, that we may try to understand ourselves, but it's very difficult, especially if there's no lights. But if in the morning then the sun comes up, then if we look in a mirror, we can see very nicely. We can see who we are. So when this, with the rising of the sun, we understand ourselves. So we understand that the sun, that all the living entities are connected to Krishna. So then they become very dear. Because they're part, if the Lord is dear to us, everything that is the Lord's becomes dear. Right? The living entities are dear to the Lord. Now if they also become dear to us, then we become dear to the Lord. Right? So if we're inimical towards other living entities, then it becomes very difficult. So that if we're inimical, that means that envy is there, jealousy is there, so that means we want to control, so we haven't understood Krishna yet. So that where we find that we don't have any difficulty dealing with others and all these different things, then that is the position where we understand who Krishna is and us as his servant. If not, we're still thinking we're in some way the controller. Otherwise, this won't arise. So then here it's mentioned that the living entity is doing so many things, and that they are not, one is aloof from them. So now he's giving further details as to this knowledge. So because we're working, who works without attachment, surrendering the results to the Lord, is unaffected. But he does so in knowledge. So this is part of the knowledge. When he understands he's not the body, he's the soul, then we see that he doesn't become affected by all these things. The senses are meeting the sense objects. He's eating, moving around, sleeping, breathing, doing so many things. But he's aloof from all this. Krishna, in the next few verses, then will start to explain what this actually means. But here he's pointing out that the reason what one is aloof. So when one is detached from it, one becomes aloof. One first has to agree to become detached. Then when he's agreed to that, then one can become aloof. Because it's going to go on. This is the point, is it will go on anyway. It's not that when we take up devotional service that the body is not going to act. The soul is active by nature. That's its eternal principle. And the body, the mind, the intelligence, the senses, they will interact with the material nature under the influence of the three modes of nature. It's just going to happen. It's just the way it is. It's not that the pure devotees don't become hungry. That happens just because it's the body. The body, naturally, if you feed it, and then after some time, it's burnt up that energy, now it wants more. So it's just the way it's arranged. But the devotee is aloof from this. Right? If it's good for the service, it's needed for the service, one does. One has to perform. One is in the body, one performs service here. One's not in this body, one's in a spiritual body, then one will serve there. Point is the devotee will always be active serving the Lord. So here, when we become aloof, then it's there. Interesting point here is also as we understand the Lord, from that point that Krishna made before, as one surrenders, then he reciprocates. As we understand that the Lord is not attached to the material nature, he is not interacting with the modes of nature. Right? He is detached from all these things. He is working, he's doing his duties, but he's not attached to these. He's not desiring results. When we accept that Krishna is like this, then also we can become like this. Krishna awards this to the devotee. So all these qualities that he's talking about here, he's basically just saying, you do things like I do things. Right? Krishna says he just comes and performs his prescribed duty because it sets the proper example. He has nothing else to do. His main interest is coming and associating with the pure devotees. Right? That's what he's saying. And he works to stop adharmic activities. Right? He encourages those who are pious. He specifically comes to associate with the devotees. And he's not attached to the material nature. He's not attached to the fruits. There's nothing for him to gain. So when the devotee understands the Lord is like this in his transcendental activities, we also then can gain or are awarded those qualities. The devotee mainly is associating with other devotees. But those who are the innocent, who come in contact with the Krishna consciousness, then he is preaching and encouraging them, whatever their position. Krishna says, don't unsettle the mind of the ignorant. But they're pious. They want to come. They want to do something. So you don't tell them, yes, just shave up, move into the temple. You just tell them, you, in your position, do like this for Krishna. Start to offer your food to Krishna and start to, do something for Krishna. Don't change your position. And as they become purified, then they can start to adjust. So then you encourage the pious in establishing them in the proper principles of dharma. Rather than just being materially pious, you show them how to work for Krishna. And the impious, those who are against devotional service, then we're preaching and trying to stop their influence on those who are pious and who are interested in God consciousness. So this is then we preach. So the preaching, we preach the innocent, we preach against those who are against devotional service, and we associate with the devotees. Right? And we perform our activities without attaching them. That's what Krishna is doing. So when we accept that, then we're able to do this. In other words, Krishna is just asking us, he's not asking us to do something that he's not doing. He's setting the example. And he's doing it all very nicely. So he's just asking, we just do like that. Also we see, Krishna came as Lord Chaitanya to specifically show how a Gaudiya Vaishnav devotee will act. How one will come, associate with devotees, avoid the association of non-devotees, and one will preach. So when that is accepted, and one thinks this is very wonderful, like that, one appreciates these qualities of Krishna, then we can gain those qualities. But until we appreciate Krishna's qualities, then what will gain? Right? First comes qualities. We see in name, form, qualities, and pastimes. When one appreciates Krishna's transcendental, you appreciate the transcendental name. So then we're able to absorb ourselves in this name. When we appreciate Krishna's transcendental form, one can receive the transcendental form. When we appreciate his qualities, right, then we can gain those qualities. Then only we can appreciate the pastimes, because pastimes means interacting with the form and qualities and name, everything. It means that's the combination of everything. So Rupa Goswami in the Nectar Devotion gives so many qualities of Krishna, just so we can fix our mind on Krishna and appreciate his transcendental qualities. Then we will gain the qualities by which we can associate with Krishna and his pure devotees. This point is there. And this will come up in the Gita also. Krishna will give many, many of his qualities, just so we can fix our mind on him and his transcendental form qualities. Then we can fix on the pastimes. Otherwise, if you can't understand and appreciate the spiritual qualities and relationship, then how will you appreciate spiritual relationship? One can't. It's not possible. If one can't understand two elements individually, how are you going to understand the combination? Because the combination always has elements that are very unique to themselves, that the individual qualities may not have. But you put them together, then you get something very special. Here Krishna mentions the yogis, abandoning attachment, act with body, mind, intelligence, and even with the senses, only for the purpose of purification. So this is important, because otherwise we will think that the yogi, someone who's properly engaged, can't engage the senses. Right? So the senses are engaged by the yogi. The yogi, he is engaging all these things, because he's just according in the line of duty, how it comes up, to perform the duty, those senses, those activities are done. And then one is purified for the purpose of purification, not for some other purpose. So here the word kaivalya then comes, it's mentioned here, comes from the root kevala, which means purified. So Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur explains, although one's mind may sometimes be distracted while making offerings of oblation, such as Indraya Swaha, still such a person's senses are kevala, acting for the purification of the Atma, for the sake of purifying the mind. In other words, in the beginning, while we're practicing, the mind may be distracted here and there, but because the purpose is to purify the senses, then we are becoming purified, even if some distraction is there. This is understood. It's practice, sadhana. It takes time for it to develop. So that is not a problem. So, and Baladev makes the point that he's citing the behavior of saintly persons here. So he says the yogis, he's meaning the devotees and all those who have attained perfection. So he's telling, you know, so many, like in the Bhagavatam, we have so many personalities there. And he's making the point that all these personalities have attained perfection. And we see in there, they're engaging in so many wonderful activities. So he's saying that this Kevala also means fully purified, Vishuddhatma. So this is for the purpose of purification. The self means we're giving up the false identity. So even though the senses are engaged, we've given up that false identity, which is going to direct what is we call favorable and what's not. Right? Depending upon our identity, we take that point. Like if we think that we're, you know, very, very elevated, you know, we're a great, how you say, philosopher, then one is going to accept those things that prove one is a great philosopher, or activities that's going to help make one a great philosopher, and one's going to reject those things. The mind will reject those things that will stand in the way of being a great philosopher, or being known as a great philosopher, like being envious of other philosophers, because if they're great, you're not going to be great. So the natural thing is you want to, the mind wants to say, oh, reject them because they're not great, and that makes me more great, right? If there's only one philosopher, then naturally you're number one, right? If you have a list of, you know, one person for the post of best philosopher, then that one person naturally is the best. So if you eradicate everybody else, then naturally you're the best. So this is how the mind works, because of the ego, the false ego. Now, if you think, I am servant of the servant, even if one's nature is philosophy and speaking and doing all these different things, one doesn't think I am the best. One simply thinks I'm the humble servant of the servant. And in this way, then, when one comes across others who are also, you know, able to speak the philosophy and do different, one can appreciate. Right? One can appreciate, oh, this person understands nicer. He said this in a very nice way, or he's brought it out very nicely, or the spiritual master, he is saying so many nice things. You know, I must understand this. So then, in this way, one becomes an instrument. One is a philosopher. That is his nature. He does his duties. He studies, he preaches. But he gives up that false ego that I am a philosopher. No, I am simply a servant of the servant. Then the mind will accept and reject based on that. Then we find the whole way the mind thinks has to change. So that makes a difference. So that is the purpose here, that one is the purpose of self-purification means for the sake of giving up false identity with the body as the self, which we've had since time immemorial. So then Krishna ends this part by saying that one who gives up the results of activities, he is happy. He gets unadulterated peace. While someone who's greedy for the fruits of the labor, he becomes entangled. So this is you'll see Krishna many times mentions this word peace in connection with detachment. In other words, peace only comes when there's no material desire. Right? Like we'll even find sometimes, let us say, this is a very interesting thing, is we have some material desire. And we think we can get it. There's an opportunity to get it. And then we become totally anxiety how to get fulfill this desire. We can do it this way, that way, and we've talked to this person and that person, or waiting for news this way and that way. And we become totally anxiety trying to get this desire. So now, even if we get an answer, no, not possible, don't even bother, the mind becomes peaceful. Why? Because you've removed that desire. And it's okay, we didn't get it. And the mind becomes peaceful again. Very interesting. Because the mind is peaceful because of not having desire. Or we generally think, if I get it, I'll be peaceful. But we even find that, you know, you have 10 people trying for the same thing, and then one can get, okay, I'm not the one. But the mind becomes peaceful. It's totally anxiety when you're trying to be the one that gets. But as soon as it's understood, you know, no chance, the mind becomes peaceful. But as soon as then someone says, no, but you can try this, then immediately it becomes agitated again. But if you just think, no chance, finished, you know, case closed, then the mind becomes peaceful. So that's even looking at it from that. So we can see that it's not attaining the material desire that makes us peaceful. Or the endeavor definitely doesn't make us peaceful. It's not having material desire. So Krishna is pointing out, if you don't have any desire for the fruit, then one is peaceful. Unadulterated peace, Krishna says. Yeah, unadulterated peace. So he'll bring this up many times, this point of peacefulness. Because that comes with it. The devotee is peaceful. Right? That's one of the qualities of the devotee. He's peaceful. Why? He has no desires. Because he doesn't desire the fruit. Then the next section is then Krishna gives, in the area of knowledge, he describes the three doers. He touched on this in yesterday's chapter. So this is verses 13 through 16. When the embodied being controls his nature and mentally renounces all actions, he resides happily in the city of nine gates, the material body, neither working nor causing work to be done. The embodied spirit, master of the city of his body, does not create activities, nor does he induce people to act, nor does he create the fruits of action. All this is enacted by the modes of material nature. Nor does the Supreme Lord assume anyone's sinful or pious activities. Embodied beings, however, are bewildered because of the ignorance which covers the real knowledge. When, however, one is enlightened with the knowledge by which nescience is destroyed, then his knowledge reveals everything, as the sun lights up everything in the daytime. So here we see, here is the embodied being, he understands that when he mentally renounces all actions, then he does not, he's no longer the so-called doer. So you have the three doers. The living entity is thinking, I am doing. I am acting, I am doing all these things. But Krishna points out, we're not. So when he gives this up, when he controls his nature and mentally renounces all actions, then he happily resides, right? Happily because now he's peaceful. The last verse mentions that, one becomes peaceful. He's happy now. He's peaceful because he's given up the desires. He performs the activity, but he understands that now it's just the body, the mind, the intelligence interacting with the material nature. Because that's what's around us. Then it says here that the embodied then does not create activities, nor does he induce people to act, nor does he create the fruits of action. Right? All this is enacted by the modes of nature. Right? So the mind thinks, I'll talk to this one, get them to do this, and I'll make this arrangement, use your intelligence to make so many plans, and the body does so many things. It's actually the modes of nature doing this. The modes of nature then make the mind act in this way, the body act in that way, and so many different things. But we don't get involved in that. Means it happens. We understand it's not being done. We have service to do. We go and talk to somebody. We understand we're not doing it. Right? The modes of nature are creating this. We are simply trying to... how do you say? Yeah. That's the fact anyway. How we get ourselves involved is we think, I get the result. Okay, now I spoke to this person. I got this person to agree, and now they're going to do this and that. So then I get the reaction for that. Because then later on someone may come along and say, hey, you talked to this guy and this and that, and then now you start something here. Right? But it's just the modes of nature are carrying this out. We simply are desiring, we want to serve Krishna or not. And then Krishna gives opportunities in which we can engage in that service. And we choose to accept them. So we can accept devotional service or not. That's basically what we do. Because we're 1/10,000th of the tip of the hair. And it's very unlikely. I mean, we generally know of ants as being very strong. Because they can lift something, you know, six times their weight, you know. Or I think there's one kind of beetle that can carry 40 times its weight. So 1/10,000th of the tip of the hair, and you have this body, it's definitely a lot of difference in size. So it's only being moved because Krishna does so through the material elements, through the material nature. The three modes, then they move and do all that. We desire. We have the desire to do. And Krishna arranges that through the... He sanctions it, the material nature does it. You want to get up and go over there. So because you want, super soul says it's okay, material nature arranges it. Sometimes we think, I want to get up and go over there. I don't have the strength. Krishna didn't sanction it. The material nature doesn't. Or if Krishna sanctions it, but we can't do it that way, maybe someone else will come along and help us, carry us over there. We'll get there. But it's in another way. So it's just the modes of nature working. We just have to learn to detach ourselves from it. Doesn't mean, the point is we still do the work. Because until one is situated on this salt completely, that one's come to Brahma Bhuta, then one doesn't have to act at all. But until such time, until one reaches the Brahma Bhuta platform, then it's expected that one will perform the prescribed duties that go along with one's conditioned nature. And then Krishna says, nor does the Supreme Lord assume anyone's sinful or pious activities. Embodied beings, however, are bewildered because of the ignorance which covers their real identity. So the Supreme Lord, he does not assume anyone's sinful activities. Because he's just having the material nature do it. Right? So dead matter is interfacing with dead matter. What's the reaction? So something is going on, but it's not for us, and Krishna doesn't take that. So it's very... He's the sanctioning agent here. Srila Prabhupada writes, the Supreme Lord does not create a particular situation for any living entity, but the living entity, bewildered by ignorance, desires to be put into certain conditions of life, and thereby his chain of action and reaction begins. A living entity is, by superior nature, full of knowledge. Nevertheless, he is prone to be influenced by ignorance due to his limited power. So the Lord doesn't create this situation. How are you saying? Yeah, he doesn't create the situation. He just sanctions that the material nature will arrange it, but we desire it. This is the interesting element of this. Many times I've seen a conversation comes up about free will. You know, you have predestiny, you have karma, all this. So where's my free will? You talk about free will. But the living entity already desired these things at some time. The situation you're in now is from previous desire. Otherwise it wouldn't happen. But we've desired it. Then the material nature starts to arrange that situation under the Lord's sanction. Then in that situation, naturally we are influenced by the situation we have created for ourselves. Right? So by our desire we create this situation. Or find ourselves in a situation. Material nature has created it. And that will influence naturally our next set of desires. So if we're in good association, we desire good. If we're in bad association, we'll naturally develop the bad. So in this way, but it's been our free will to choose this. And then in that situation, the material nature starts to make the next situation for us, or transform the one we're in, the direction that we're wanting. So like this is going on. So we found ourselves in something now, but that is our desire. Like we cook something, and then after some time we sit down to eat it. Now, if we've forgotten we've cooked it, we may think, well, you know, what's this stuff? You know, why am I being served this, you know? I mean, I don't like this. But we forgot we cooked it. You know? Like that. But since there's nothing else around, generally we'll end up eating it anyway. Right? But the free will is there to decide to eat, not eat. So the point comes is that we have created it due to our desire. But we don't actually create it. So we've simply desired, and the three modes of nature have made it happen. And Krishna is not creating it because he's only sanctioned it. But he's the ultimate cause. Because he is the potency that allows it to happen. But he doesn't get involved. He doesn't deal with the material energy like that. He just enters it so that it can function. Otherwise, it's dead matter. He enters it so it actually functions, so the living entity can think that this is something I can control and enjoy. So it becomes a very fine point. So the point of free will, we say free will today because it's only because we've forgotten. We don't know what was there, what we did that got us in the situation. But at any moment we have the choice to choose to serve Krishna. And once we make that decision, then we see things are adjusted to go in that direction. Then it's a matter we had the choice at any moment to continue. We're continuing. It's been made. You know, we're somewhere, you know, wherever we may be around the planet, engaged in material activities, we take up spiritual activities, we heard about the glories of Mayapur, we think it's a nice place, then by having that desire, Krishna's sanction, we're here. So now we can continue in that way. Or we may have desires, other desires, and we find ourselves somewhere else. So at every moment, the process is dynamic, and we have that choice to continue or not. But the difference is that since we're not the doer, then when we have our desire this moment, generally we see there's some time before that fructifies. We get the result. Otherwise, right, if we were the actual doer, it happened right now. But it takes time. So we can understand someone else must be making the arrangements. That. Murijan gives the example of the father lifts a big weight, right? So the small child sees this and thinks, I would like to lift. So he goes over there and is trying to lift. He can't lift. But seeing the desire, the father comes over there and helps the child lift it. So now if the child thinks, yes, now I'm the big weight lifter, then he's a fool. He doesn't see things as he is. Right? But the father isn't just lifting the weight. The child, because he desired it, only then the father is helping them. So in the same way is when the living entity has that desire for some activity in the material world, then Krishna sanctions that. His potency is there, and the material nature then does it. Is that clear? An important point. Okay. If we deserve it. Means we may have done other things that we have other desires, and so in that desire you can't do the one desire. You know? They don't fit together. Like, I have desire to, let's say, go climb some mountain that's, you know, covered with snow. So now halfway through I think, wow, it's cold up here, I wish I was in the Bahamas. So it's not going to happen right at that moment. It can't be sanctioned because one desire is already taking place. So then when that finishes, maybe something else can be, and that happens after. And then when you get to Bahamas, you go, wow, this is hot. It was better on the mountain. The snow was like this. So it takes time, you know. And then it's also according, if you want something that is pious, you know, good birth, wealth, position, education, good looks, all these different things. If one has performed the prescribed duties that create that, you've properly done things. Then when you desire these things, then according to how much you've worked, you get. But if you've been sinful and you desire these things, then you can't get. Not until you've gone through the reactions of your sinful activities. Then once that's cleared, then you can get. Or you may get part of it. You may be very beautiful, but you know, you're the best looking, you know, gangster on the block, you know. We had that in America, gangsters in the 30s, there was one guy named Pretty Boy Floyd. And he looked like a kid. You know, he's like 30 years old, killed God only knows how many people, but he looked like a teenager. So they called him Pretty Boy Floyd. So there's mixed karma. Very beautiful, but bad mentality. You know, rough lifestyle. So like that, you may get a mixed reaction. But it just goes. It's just like you work. We can see it. So we can see. We go to work. We work for a week. We should get a week's pay. If we only work for 5 days, I can't expect 6 days' work pay. You know, like that. I don't work. I can't say I should get paid. So there must be. Since you think you are the doer, therefore, then you must endeavor. You must have that desire and endeavor for it. You must make that because you think I am doing it. So therefore, okay, you're doing it. So work for it. So the devotee, he doesn't think like that. He's the doer, so he does his duties and accepts whatever Krishna sends. It may work nice, may not work nice. He eats, doesn't eat, doesn't matter. Because even if he's endeavoring for it, he's only going to get according to what he deserves anyway. So it's not in his hand anyway. The only thing the living entity has in his hand is the desire to either do sinful activities, pious activities, or devotional activities. These are the desires. So, Maya or Krishna. And in Maya, you have two choices, sinful or pious. That's it. And then the modes of nature take care of the rest. So then, in the next section, is then Krishna talks about liberation, where he's specifically focusing on the nature of the super soul. This is text 17 through 26. When one's intelligence, mind, faith, and refuge are all fixed in the Supreme, then one becomes fully cleansed of misgivings through complete knowledge and thus proceeds straight on the path of liberation. So here, when the intelligence, faith, important here he mentions faith, refuge. In other words, we're surrendered to the Lord, we're dependent upon the Lord. So when that is there, then we see Krishna takes care. Right? Krishna will take care. He's our maintainer, he's our protector. Right? Then, and he is the ultimate goal. Everything we do is for him. Then one moves straight, because one has nothing else. It says, then one becomes fully cleansed of misgivings. Because otherwise, if one doesn't have this, one doesn't have full shelter in Krishna, that means we're thinking, I will protect myself or I'll arrange in some way. So misgivings remain. See, the misgivings can only go away when we've fully taken shelter of Krishna. So here it says, when intelligence, mind, faith, and refuge are all fixed in the Supreme, then one becomes fully cleansed of misgivings. So as we've fixed on one point, then these anarthas are removed. We see that in the devotional process we discussed some few days back, when we're going through anartha nivritti, the first three stages, one is not very fixed. One's hurt a little bit, and then immediately I'm a big pandit. One is fired up today, not so fired up tomorrow. Or one is kind of, do I do this, or should I do that? Do I serve Krishna in this way, or should I serve Krishna in that way? But as soon as one decides, no, I'm going to fix my mind on Krishna, I'm going to serve Krishna, that's then where it becomes serious. Then Maya then takes note, and then it's a fight. She wants to see, are you actually serious? You know? If she just pushes a little bit and you give up, then it's a big problem. Just like this, I'll give you a good example. Here, we're fighting with something, and then you have the temple. And everybody in the temple is pushing. They want to go back to Godhead, right? So you have 50 devotees in this temple, everyone's pushing to go back to Godhead. Then you take one of the senior devotees in the temple, has some problems, right? Now, if everybody in the temple thinks, wow, if they can't make it, I can't make it, and gives up, then fight's over. Right? Maya is so clever. It removes one person, wipes out 50. So Maya is clever. She knows how to work. She's been doing this in time immemorial. She's not new at this, right? We're the one that can't remember what last birth. And Maya remembers what's been going on since, you know, she's been doing this universe after universe after universe since time immemorial. So she knows all the tricks. So like this, she just does something. You're going to do something. You're going to sit down and study. And just at that time, somebody walks in and just starts talking this and that, and you can't get rid of them. Then you could just think, ah, forget it, you know? But then, whatever. When that person goes, then you sit down and study. Then she can see, okay, this person is serious. But all she is doing is checking if you're serious. You're saying you're serious, but she's checking by pushing. Right? Because she'll never push more than what one can handle. That's the thing. She'll never do more than that. Her business is to check our sincerity. And if we're not sincere, then we get dealt with in that way. If we are, then... When she tests, then she also becomes our well-wisher. Okay. So that we must continue that push. Then she sees one is determined. Vyavasayatmika buddhi. Here. And, one of one's intelligence, mind, faith, refuge are all fixed in the Supreme. It's all fixed. Then one becomes fully cleansed in misgivings. Right? That's how it goes. It's not that we change everything, change all the management, change all the social structure, change this, give everybody $1 million, you know, whatever it is. That's not going to get rid of our misgivings. Only when we fix the mind, the faith, the refuge in Krishna, the intelligence, then the misgivings go. There's not another way. We have to understand that. Right? Otherwise, we're dealing with ego. We think, no, I will only be happy and all that if this is done. So that means we're not willing to do nishkam karma and take up seriously serving Krishna. We're more into sakam karma, which is also service, but we put our own desires as more important, like that. Then the process is slower. But still, Krishna recommends, don't disturb those who have this desire. Those who are very attached, don't unsettle them. Let them do that. Let them progress how they, at the speed they can. So one has to be very careful to see where one is situated. Because this is Krishna's telling what's going on. This is knowledge. This is the real thing. These are how you test your own spiritual life. You know? This is what Krishna is giving us. The humble sages, by virtue of true knowledge, see with equal vision a learned and gentle Brahmin, a cow, an elephant, a dog, and a dog eater. Those whose minds are established in sameness and equanimity have already conquered the conditions of birth and death. They are flawless like Brahman, and thus are already situated in Brahman. So one can see like this, then one is situated on that platform. So this is what we're trying to get to. Right? This is in the chapter, Karma Yoga. So it's like the perfection of this Nishkam Karma is on the Brahman platform. And one's come to that stage. Right? That's the perfection. So we understand, we're below that position, we're trying to get to that position. We're endeavoring how much we can. But this is the stage you're trying to get to. Just like we know, devotional service one should be in Uttama. But we go through the stages, Kanista, Madhyam, and just progress up to that point. Then then things become all right. So one should understand that this is how they're seeing. They don't see the difference. In other words, all the soul and the Brahman, the activities are being carried out by the modes of nature, the elephant, the dog eater. It's all just going on by the modes of nature and their desire. And their spirit soul, pure spirit soul. But it doesn't mean that I deal with the dog and the gentle Brahman culturally in the same way. No, because I'm following prescribed duties. And prescribed duties say I deal with the Brahman in one way and I deal with the dog in another way. But I don't see the difference in the position of their soul. Otherwise, how do we become dear to everybody? Right? The six Goswamis were dear to everybody because they saw everybody as servant of Krishna. Like that. Though, naturally, as a preacher, as a madhyama, then you make distinction between those that you can preach to and those you can't. A dog, you don't sit down and start discussing with them Vedanta Sutra and all that. You know, you just feed them. That's all. You just feed them. That's how they can be engaged in service. Their soul is supposed to do service. Dogs eat very nicely. So you feed them. Right? And they're very happy, very appreciative. That, like this. And a Brahmin, then you deal with them in a different way. Like that. Though feeding them is also highly recommended. Then, a person who neither rejoices upon achieving something pleasant, nor laments upon obtaining something unpleasant, who is self-intelligent, who is unbewildered, and who knows the science of God, is already situated in transcendence. So if we're not disturbed by things as they come, in this way, pleasant, unpleasant, and that, because we understand it's just Krishna's, it's going to go how, according to his direction. And according to our desire. Like maybe we're performing the activity. Let us say I'm performing my activity. But I'm not getting a good result. So there's something going on here. Because Krishna is sanctioning. Or not. So I'm not getting result. So Krishna must not be sanctioning. So there may be various reasons. Either he wants to teach me something, or he wants to teach others something, or both. Teaching me something. Maybe I'm doing everything perfectly, but because of my ignorant or passionate nature, I'm attached to the result. So that's not pleasing to Krishna. Just because I did some service, but I did it in totally attached mood, does not please Krishna. Krishna's interested in that, trying to do something for him, that devotion. So therefore, even someone who is expert in an area ends up being no one satisfied, no one appreciates. They think, well, I'm expert, no one else knows actually what is expertise, so therefore they don't appreciate. So there's some problem with these devotees. And then one may adjust one's devotional endeavors. But the point is that, no, our attitude may be wrong. Or we're doing, and maybe we're doing nice, our attitude is nice, we're still not getting the result. But maybe Krishna wants to show how one is determined and one continues, then we get the result ultimately. And then it's very, very wonderful. Right? Like the Pandavas, they're in the forest. They had half a kingdom. Right? They had half a kingdom. They had Indraprastha. And Duryodhana had Hastinapur. And they went through so many difficulties, even lost that. But then, what happened? Then they got the whole kingdom. They had the whole empire. So because they pushed on and just carried on with the Lord's plan, then they got such a wonderful result. And then we see, yes, no matter what difficulties are there, we just continue in our service. And results will be there. Such a liberated person is not attracted to material sense pleasure, but is always in trance, enjoying the pleasure within. In this way, the self-realized person enjoys unlimited happiness, for he concentrates on the Supreme. An intelligent person does not take part in the sources of misery, which are due to contact with material senses. O son of Kunti, such pleasures have a beginning and an end, and so the wise man does not delight in them. Before giving up this present body, if one is able to tolerate the urges of the material senses and check the force of desire and anger, he is well situated and happy in this world. One whose happiness is within, who is active within, No, one who is active and rejoices within, and whose aim is inward, is actually the perfect mystic. He is liberated in the Supreme, and ultimately he obtains the Supreme. Those who are beyond the dualities that arise from doubts, whose minds are engaged within, who are always busy working for the welfare of all living beings, who are freed from all sins, achieve liberation in the Supreme. So here, Prabhupada makes a point here. Unless one is able to relish happiness from within, how can one retire from the external engagement for deriving superficial happiness? A liberated person enjoys happiness by factual experience. He can therefore sit silently in any place and enjoy the activities of life from within. Such a liberated person no longer desires external material happiness. This state is called Brahma-bhuta, attaining which one is assured of going back to Godhead, back to home. So these are describing the nature of this person who has come to this platform. Then one point Krishna makes here, it's very interesting, that's brought out, is that one thinks, well, how long do I have to tolerate this mind and the senses and all that? Basically, he's saying here, before giving up the present body, if one is able to tolerate, so that means up to the point of death, basically, is what we're looking at. Is that the mind is just, the mind is crazy. That's all. When we accept the mind is crazy, senses are crazy and all that, we just tolerate. Then it doesn't bother us. It's only when we take this seriously, that this is something worthwhile, that we become disturbed. So the here he's talking about the happiness within, means he doesn't bother with the senses, the mind, this, that. It thinks so many things, wants to do so many things, but doesn't bother. Like Yamunacharya says, whenever I think of sex life, I spit. Now here is a advanced devotee, an Uttamadhikar. He's the guru of Ramanujacharya. Right? So he's not just any ordinary. And he's saying, when this thought comes in the mind, then I spit at the thought. So the mind, that's just the mind's business. It just brings up. It just accepts and rejects. Oh, this is there. What about this? And then, no, we don't want. So as we train the mind, then it does this less and less. But the point is this, something is always there. It's just the way the mind is. Right? Until it becomes thoroughly cleansed and then totally absorbs. This is the Brahma-bhuta platform. Beyond the Brahma-bhuta platform, then it goes totally, can get totally absorbed in Krishna. But up to that point, there's always some disturbance of the mind. It's just the way the mind is. Now one may feel that he said all these things, and now he's talking about performing this Nishkam Karma Yoga, and he's talking about people on the the Brahma-bhuta platform. So then we may be, feel very, it's very difficult, or maybe discouraged. So then Krishna makes this point. Those who are free from anger and all material desires, who are self-realized, self-disciplined, and constantly endeavoring for perfection, are assured of liberation in the Supreme in the very near future. So when we are endeavoring for these things, and as we are attaining these things, then Krishna is assuring here. He says, are assured of liberation in the Supreme in the very near future. So it's just in a very short time, one will get. So one should take that, make that endeavor, make that commitment. Because when we make that commitment to obtain the Supreme, that is the major step in getting. Just making that commitment. So without that commitment, then one cannot progress very, very nicely. So, yeah. Okay, and then the last two sections here, very short. Then Krishna is giving now, talking about this liberated personality, and he's giving a hint at the next chapter, preview. Prabhupada mentions here, it's a preview of the next chapter. 27 and 28. This is a description of Ashtanga Yoga. Shutting out all external sense objects, keeping the eyes and vision concentrated between the two eyebrows, suspending the inward and outward breaths within the nostrils, and thus controlling the mind, senses, and intelligence, the transcendentalist aiming at liberation becomes free from desire, fear, and anger. One who is engaged in this state is certainly liberated. Then, his final point, but we notice here that these things, shutting out all external sense objects means we're not attached to them. The yogi then leaves them, but we see that Nishkam Karma Yogi, he may engage them, but he's not attached, so they've been shut out. And controlling the mind, senses, and intelligence, aiming at liberation, one becomes free from desire, fear, and anger. So the Nishkam Karma Yogi also performs these activities. We just see that he doesn't use the prescribed duties of, concentrating the eyes and the vision between the eyebrows, suspending the breath, sitting in yogic postures, and going through all this. He doesn't follow that path of prescribed duties. But the mood in which it's done and the goal, what is there for it, that he accepts. So Krishna will describe in the next chapter then about this Ashtanga and then how devotional activities are the best. And then in conclusion to this chapter, then a person in full consciousness, this is text 29, a person in full consciousness of me, knowing me to be the ultimate beneficiary of all sacrifices and austerities, the supreme lord of all planets and demigods, and the benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities, attains peace from the pangs of material miseries. This is the Bhokta Ram Yagya Tapasam. So, Bhurijan Prabhu is pointing out here, is you have Bhokta Ram Yagya, means that whatever sacrifices you do, that is meant to please the Lord. And Bhokta Ram Tapasam, whatever austerities you perform, are meant for His pleasure also. So all the yajna and the demigods, all this whole process, that is all for His pleasure. And the tapasya that one does is also for His pleasure. Sridam Sarva Bhutanam, that he is the natural, Krishna, Prabhupada points out, very nice point here, that he is the natural friend. Here, Vishwanath says here first here. Krishna is the well-wishing friend of all living beings. He is mercifully bestowing benefit through His devotees in the form of their instructions on devotional service. So Krishna comes to us externally as the devotees, and they help us in devotional service. They give instructions, they give us direction, they give us their association. So Krishna is our friend in that way. He bestows upon us His mercy by giving us the association of devotees. And then Prabhupada, in a lecture, 1968 Bhagavad Gita lecture, then he speaks the same point about Suridam, Sarva Bhutanam. So he says Suridam comes from Surit, which means friend. So he says there's three kinds of friend: Bandhu, Mitra, and Surit. So a bandhu is kind of like, official friendship. Mitra is social friendship. But surit means the actual friend, sincere friend. It means, they'll always be with you, like close, confidential friend. They're all your well-wisher. The other two, they're, friends for whatever, social function, that kind of acquaintance kind of thing. Or you do things together, but the relationship is not very deep. But here, surit means that they are always wishing for our good. So Krishna is going with us wherever we go. Even we go into the body of an animal, a pig or a dog, cat, Krishna goes along with us. So I mean, what kind of friend is that? I mean, that's a pretty good friend. He'll go wherever we go. So this is pointed out. So when we accept Krishna as friend, right, then we can take up these activities also. Another definition of friendship or sakyam, when we serve the Lord in friendship, is we understand what is His desire, right? And preach. Here we're first understanding that He is friendly towards us, so He comes with us. But when we understand that friendship, then we want to reciprocate it. When one becomes more mature, one wants to reciprocate by preaching. Then one becomes, in this way, Krishna's friend. So that ends this chapter. Is there any questions or comments? Yes. Say again?
Attraction to Krishna's qualities comes after the fact that he was born and God attracted to his name. But while we're chanting a basis of nations to defend, then there's greater attraction to his name. So if we use the same defense as chanting to the
Question. Is there another point, or that's just a question? Okay. I was describing that it's a natural flow from name, form, qualities, pastimes. That from the name, one hears the name, but one doesn't necessarily know who a person is. And when one sees them or hears about, then you know what they look like. You get to know them more, but you don't know their qualities so much. But if you hear about that or get to know them more, you hear the qualities. Then if one's more intimate, then one can know what is the activities of that person. So it's a natural progression. We want to establish a relationship with someone. It goes through this is how you establish a relationship. So it's given to us in this form. But it's not that the different aspects can't happen at once. So question is that since we're chanting on the offensive platform, so until one comes to the clearing stage, then does that mean one cannot properly progress on this? So one will still be stuck with the name and the form, qualities, pastimes won't develop. So naturally, in a very dynamic and full way, they may not. Just like we read about Krishna's qualities. That's part of hearing. We must hear. And we can explain and discuss. But it may just be knowledge to us. And with time, then as we purify ourselves by service, these misgivings start to go. Then we see that they become more realized, more we can appreciate that quality. Otherwise, we know Krishna has a quality, and because it is Krishna's quality and we're hearing about it or talking about it, we become happy. So even if we haven't realized it still, because it's service, we become happy. But as we become realized, it becomes more and more deep. Like that. So there's no loss on that. Same time as one hears these things, they just don't stick so much. Like we hear the pastimes, they don't stick so much. Sometimes we hear, you know, if it's a new pastime, then we remember that, you know. But otherwise, and some of the qualities are mentioned, so much qualities. Like the whole Gita, especially later, just turns into qualities. Here, all this is just qualities. But we generally forget that. We'll just remember the intellectual part of it. We forget the qualities, you know. Not disturbed like this, has no desires for these things, sees with an equal vision. We'll forget those things. And then we'll say, I'm doing my service, why so much trouble? But you forgot all the qualities that we're supposed to do it with. Right? Because that's actually a more advanced level, the qualities. Because that's what's happening. Madhyama means qualities are starting to manifest. Therefore, they're accepted as advanced devotees, because qualities start to manifest. And the neophyte, then generally you'll see less qualities are manifest. Sincerity is there in that, then of course one will advance quickly and so many qualities develop. But it's just natural with these things, the steps like that. So if one chants, by chanting,
Prabhupada gives the example we mentioned before of the milk and the yogurt, is that the same thing that's created the problem cures the problem. So because of our offenses to the name, but the solution is to keep chanting the holy name. If I keep chanting, then that purifies that position. Is that we're trying to do something for Krishna, but then we find that with time then something changes. Example is giving that suddenly now flood, we're eating fat rice and sabji with chilies in it, and then we get upset. So all along we thought we were doing for Krishna, we were just sitting down and in a very Krishna conscious way, just eating the Mahaprasad, picking out a few pieces of cheese and the pakora and this and that. And you know, we're very Krishna conscious. And then we find out that suddenly we don't seem to be so much, because we're not seeing Krishna in the fat rice. We don't see Krishna in the chili that we just ate. So then we become disturbed. So the point is this is what Rupa Goswami means when we discuss this point. And anyavilasita means this, even the endeavor that one is trying for that is accepted on the transcendental platform. Because it's in connection with sat, it is sat. Though we may not be able to take full advantage of it. So the point that Krishna is making here to Arjuna is this very, for this very reason. Is we now understand the material world is a place of misery, and that we're the soul and Krishna is the Supreme Lord and we're not the doer. So the natural thing is as Arjuna is bewildered, is then I should just renounce everything. But because we still have these anarthas in the heart, we'll renounce, but we have no process now how to purify those anarthas. Because the renunciation means to do it properly, fully, one's on the Brahma-Bhuta platform. Then, because one is on the transcendental platform, then one just starts engaging in transcendental activities, and there's no problem. One can do so with the body, without the body, it doesn't matter. But if somebody has anarthas and these attachments, then they have to perform a work, prescribed duties. And by doing that, and endeavoring with knowledge to be detached, do it for Krishna and all this, then one becomes purified. So the greater that one is detached, the greater one is doing it for Krishna, understanding Krishna as the enjoyer and all these things, then that quickly we become purified. So even if we have a little bit, we become purified. And that will then allow us next time to do it a little bit more, and with time a little bit more, like this. So Krishna arranges these points so one can actually test on whether we're a transcendental prasadam eater or whether we, you know, have our specific preferences. Is the activity the purification or the chanting? So the point is that this is the same point that Arjuna is confused by. Is that he sees the work that's being engaged in Krishna's service as separate from, you know, spiritual understanding. So if you connect the service to Krishna, then it is transcendental. That's the point that Krishna is bringing out in this chapter. Is he's very much showing how the two are combined. You see the knowledge of this living entity, this yogi, by how he behaves. So that they're combined. He perfectly performs this activity in the perfect consciousness. So when you connect something to the Lord and do it for the Lord, if you don't have the desire for the results, then it's not giving a material reaction. See, we only call something material because we're getting a material reaction. Yes? Something in connection with this?
Yeah. When you explain it, it's like it doesn't matter what you cook. If you cook something that tastes so terrible and so hot, will actually Krishna accept it as loving service? Or will he reject it and it's actually not loving service? I have seen so often he rejected it.
We could bring that in. I would take it as it's a different topic, because unless you were here at that time and knew how hot they cooked then, what they're cooking now, what we call hot, what they were cooking for the devotees over there, that is called absolutely mild compared to what they were cooking in those days, and they called that was normal.
Yeah, I
did. Huh?
I did go away.
Okay, but did you eat it?
Yeah,
so I'm just saying the hotness of that then and the hotness of what it is now is very different. So to me, it's a different topic. What is being talked about is that we see the platform is that whether what is our attachment or not, this is the discussion. You know, it's like if it comes in the way we want, just like you put the maha plate, then according to our particular inclinations, we'll generally go for certain preparations like that. Rather than just whatever we get, we're happy with this maha prasada. Right? So we're talking on the principle of we're not the deciding factor of what's prasad, not prasad, and this and that. That's another topic. What's being discussed is prasadam is coming, and I like certain kinds of prasad, certain kinds I don't like. So if I end up the ones I don't like, because it's out of my control, then I get upset. You understand? Like that, because he also mentioned fat rice, and in those days fat rice was considered quite fine to offer and eat. So, you know, so the point comes up is just we're looking at it from our side, right? This is an essential point in applying the devotional process, is the nature of the mind. Is the first thing is to put it on someone else first. But this situation doesn't apply to me, you know, because, you know, it is too hot, it's not the shadam anyway. So the reason I'm getting upset is because, you know, I want to see the Krishna eat so nicely and everything, you know. You know, for the last, you know, 20 years I couldn't care less, don't know what Krishna eats, who cooks it, what are their qualifications, who they buy the vegetables from, whether they wash them or not, what kind of pots they use, what kind of fire they cook in, you know, whether people wash their hands or not, what kind of plate, who makes the offering. But suddenly today I'm very concerned that Krishna is getting the first class offering, you know, that, you know, it's like this, only because I happened to eat it today. If I had to eat it today and found out it was hot, I wouldn't have cared. Like that. So the whole thing comes is that we have to first take our side of it. Then when we can accept our side of it, then we can be qualified to apply the thing for others. Because then that comes down to management. See, the question here is the devotional, our devotional mood, our internal mood, how we're seeing it. The other is the management of just the cooks are putting too much, too little, or this or that. and make adjusting it to make it right, so that then it's nice for the service. Right? But that means I have to be in a position to say what's proper and this and that. And I have to change the other people. Right? I have to change someone else. So I can change someone else only when I can change myself. Otherwise, it won't happen. You can see that. Is that you see someone come in, they tell everybody to do something, no one does anything. And you generally check, it's because that person that told you what to do is not willing to do what they just told you to do. But if the person comes and says, do this, 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 and it's you do it, and if you don't do it, they'll do it themselves, then you'll see everybody will follow it very nicely. So the first point in the Vedic culture is how to correct yourself. Like when you have the Dharma Shastras, the first thing they do is tell you what is the connection between the culture and God. Then the second thing, what Krishna is doing here, then the second thing is, how do you correct yourself? And how do you situate yourself properly? Then once that's done, then the second half of the Dharma Shastra will be for that person who can correct themselves and can understand the whole system, how they're going to manage the system so that everybody else can be facilitated so they can correct themselves. So we always have to see that we keep it on the platform of first see that I have gained the point of the instruction and I can apply it. Then I can see how to apply it to others. Then we're qualified to do that. You know, like nowadays so much talk is there. Leaders aren't qualified. We're saying that they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing. So we're saying, do what you're supposed to do first. Then lead. So we have to accept that same process for ourselves. It may be true. Leaders may not be so trained, may not be so expert or developed themselves, so they shouldn't lead. But are we in the position that we can lead because we are fully trained? So that aspect is there first. Then the other comes as a natural course. Both are devotional service. But one has to situate yourself ideally in one, then one is effective in the second. He's effective in the second. So that was I'm taking as the point here. If we want to discuss prasadam, then it's another thing, and then your point becomes very valid. But since we're just discussing the attitude of the individual, then I feel it wouldn't be. Some may argue that chanting is sufficient. Yes. Then, here. So the question is that some say that chanting is sufficient, but then it is also pointed out that if one is conditioned, then one needs the pancha priti vithi to purify oneself. So that creates regulation, it gives a set of activities to perform. So is that the prescribed duties that Krishna is talking about here? So that is the first level of the prescribed duties here. That's the first. Then if one can function just on that platform, just like if one can function on the Brahma-Bhuta platform, one doesn't need the prescribed duties. One will do it to set example. But if one is conditioned, one needs prescribed duties. So now this also gives two different levels. Then the first level is Pancharatrika Vidhi, the rules and regulations of sadhana bhakti. And the rituals of deity worship, that combination, that is the Pancharatra. So now, if one can function just on that platform, that's enough. But if the attachments and the mood of the doer and all this is more, or it's outside that sphere, means, or let's say, it's not outside the sphere, but it's just, there's a greater, yeah, there's a more attachment to results. Then working for Krishna means you bring in the Varnashram system. So here we see that Arjuna is supposed to fight as a Kshatriya. That's his duty. So generally we're including down to that level. And Krishna goes beyond that into the, even the ignorant, you don't displace them. That's the Sakam karma. Like that. Karma yoga, karma means I'm doing it fully for myself. I want the results is for me. Sakam karma yoga means I want the result, but I'm willing to part with Sangha for Krishna because I know Krishna is the ultimate goal. Nishkam means I'm willing to part with, you know, what all of it. The result is Krishna's. Whether I keep or don't keep, that's up to the needs of the service arrangements with others, you know, with authorities. So it's on a higher level. So that's working for Krishna. And then lower than that, the Sakam is at least give something to Krishna. Right? So it's just a difference on whether it's yours, then you give, or before you've worked, you've gone given. It's already Krishna's. So you have that. And then the sadhana. Like you see, Prabhupada came to America and started the movement based on sadhana. Some brahmacharis, you know, living in the ashram, chanting 64 rounds, you know, and during service there in the temple preaching bus. Just sadhana. But when that wasn't working, then, you know, he cut it down to 32 rounds, then that was the problem. Then he cut it down to 16. They could do the 16, now what do they do with the rest of the day? Because they're active, and the reason they can't sit 64 is mind is restless, this, that, can't sit. So then they have to work for Krishna. So then naturally then you introduce the different aspects of Varnashram. You know, so at that time it was just brahmacharya, so those aspects are there. And then some grihasthas came, and that started, then later he introduced the sannyas, and like that. So slowly, slowly, you know, the deity worship came in very strongly then. And slowly these things expand. So it depends on the individual, where they're situated. So since it's being done for the Lord, like that, it doesn't matter. Point is one must find one's situation. See, it's whether you follow the prescribed duties of the brahmachari without attachment, offering results to Krishna, in knowledge of Krishna, or one follows the duties of the grihastha and offers the results to Krishna, and does it for Krishna's satisfaction with understanding the knowledge of Krishna and ourselves is not the body. There's no difference, because both of them purify, both of them give transcendental knowledge. Both of them bring one to the point of devotion with Krishna. So it doesn't matter. The point is the intelligent person sees one's conditioned nature and engages in those duties for Krishna. Then one advances. Now, if one is doing the duty and one is proud, thinking it's his and all this, that's not of great use. It's something. Something is there, but it's not of great use. It's not dynamic. But it's better than nothing. So it doesn't matter the situation. So because of lack of understanding, sacrifice. Sacrifice means doing your duty for the Lord. That's sacrifice. So because of not understanding sacrifice, we think karma is the important thing. Not sacrificing it to Krishna. Therefore, when one performs the karma of the grihastha, the brahmachari, the sannyas, each one has something to say about the other. Oh, this one is this, you know? Brahmacharis are spaced out, grihasthas are attached, and you know, sannyasis, you know, should be a little more honest, you know? Like that. You know, they should go to the back of the bus, and the brahmachari should be honest and get married. So, because in the system, there's a lack of understanding what is sacrifice. So all of them are there. all of them are bona fide paths. Krishna in the previous chapter gave all the different things of sacrifice. So he told of the brahmachari, of the grihastha, of the yogi, of the sannyasi, all these things. He's told all these. So that's all within the realm of karma. Now we have to do something, so we do those same things, but now we do it for Krishna, without desire for the results. So that's sacrifice. Sacrifice is the bridge that connects us between us and the Lord. So otherwise, if you know, either being a sannyasi or a grihastha, this or that, were so important, then Arjuna, Krishna would say, he's just saying, do your duty. Otherwise, he would have said, yeah, you're right. If you do this, then, you know, what's going to happen to your kids and who's going to take care of your family? I mean, Arjuna's kids got killed in this battle. So if just doing those duties were the most important, then Krishna would have agreed with Arjuna. But it's doing those duties to please Krishna. That is what's important. Therefore, Arjuna attains perfection on the battlefield as a kshatriya. A grihastha can attain perfection performing their duties as a grihastha. Brahmachari performing their duties. Sannyasi performing their duties. And if we forget that, then we become bewildered by you know, our doubts, our misgivings, and then we play around also. Then we put more emphasis on the karma than on the karma yoga. Or if we don't even understand Varnashram properly, then we speculate and make up our own system or combination, what we think is a sannyasi. Right? I mean, there are people who are saying that our sannyasis, they should, you know, be like the ancient sannyasis, you know, have one piece of cloth and walk barefoot and all that. But the ancient sannyasis also wore wooden shoes. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had his sannyasis for preaching, wear sewn cloth and travel in vehicles. He was traveling in Jaguar at the time, you know. So I don't see any of our driving around in Jags. So he was cutting a profile much higher than what today is going on. If there had been planes, he would have been flying around. But the best they could get for him was a Jag. What to do? That was all that was available. And that's what he drove into Radhakundli. So, like that. So, his devotees are not even understanding the system. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, as Saraswatis, were following his direction. We're not accepting that. Why? Because we don't understand that the system of ashrams and varnas is sacrifice. Then we get it all mixed up. This one should do this, that one should do that. You know? First understand devotional service. Then with that mood we can look at, take a look at the Varnashram. In other words, you start from the top down. It means religion without philosophy is sentiment. Or if we throw out the philosophy, then the religion, and only have philosophy, is mental speculation. Therefore, so difficult to come up with solutions, because it's mental speculation. The system is not accepted. So one has to be very careful. Or the varnas, that's even more touchy. I mean, it's quite obvious, you're married, you're not married. You know, okay, we can live with that. But the varnas then even become more sticky, because definitely no one sees it as sacrifice. It's simply position and prestige and facilities. So Krishna says that doing the duty, right? He's telling to do the duty as a kshatriya, so that is varna. So doing that duty as a kshatriya, then it's not a matter of prestige, this and that. It's service to Krishna. So we're worried that we don't want to end up on the bottom of the pile, because then, you know, where's our prestige? Where's our position, facility? That also is a lack of understanding of the system. I mean, Ramananda Rai, as a Shudra, being a manager, governor for Madras province, for Maharaj Prataparudra, he had more material facility than, you know, probably many other Kshatriyas and definitely the Vaishyas and Brahmins have. So influence and position and respect doesn't really have as much to do with the varnas. It's just who listens to who. It means the Shudra is going to listen to either a Vaishya, a Kshatriya, or a Brahmin. That's what makes his position. So he has to listen to Maharaj Pratiparudra. There's a good chance as the governor, he doesn't have to listen through anybody else. He directly gets his instructions from Maharaj Pratiparudra. You know, so the position is very great. You know, the Vaishya to do his business doesn't have to take anyone else's advice. He's independent. It is the choices. Though he has to pay his tax. He has to be charitable. The Kshatriya is independent also. He makes the decisions. It's his decision. Just like here, the modes of nature, they do the action. Right? And others just desire, living at the desires the Supreme Lord sanctions. So the same way, the king, he makes the decision. He gets the result. Right? He gets the reaction, he gets the result. That's why in the kingdom you only hear the king. He's a great king, he has great Brahmins who advise him, but the Brahmins advise him and that's where it stops. They've given their advice, he does it, doesn't do it, doesn't matter to them. Of course, if he never follows their instruction, they'll consider it a waste of time, they'll go do something else. But because they don't consider they're running the kingdom, they don't get the reaction. Right? They neither take the tax, get the results of the tax, neither do they get the praise of running a nice scheme, neither do they get the sinful reactions of the people for the tax being taken. That comes with the tax. The king gets that. He's the one that's the doer. And then the Brahmins, they follow the scriptures, follow other Brahmins, follow the rules of the Dharma. So it's just a way to make the system work. There has to be someone telling someone else what to do, and there must be interaction. It's rasa. There must be proper interaction between people. So since we don't know what is proper rasa, because we think we're the controller and we think we're the enjoyer, and each and every living entity thinks in the same way, it makes it real difficult. Right? It makes it real difficult. Just like if you have some prasadam and you have two people. Now if both of them think they're the enjoyer, it makes it real difficult. Because then they just sit down and they try whatever it is to get whatever they can. It lacks some cultural finesse. But if one thinks I'm the servant, the other one is the enjoyer, then you can serve. And the other one can eat. And then there's very nice interaction. As soon as that is there, then there's interaction, there's rasa, there's relationship. So the whole Varnashram system is how to create a proper system of interaction between a whole bunch of people who are in the illusion of thinking that they are the enjoyer and controller. Each one thinks they're God. So, okay, you be God, but now, you know, you have to run the country. And you be God, and you tell them what to do. And you be God, and you run your business like this, and you pay tax to this other God. And you be God, and you assist the others. But the whole point is then they slowly, with time, by good association, understand that they're not God, and they're servant. So at least, even though they're totally materialistic, at least they have relationships, and their emotional platform, the sensual platform, is at least is taken care of as much as can be expected. But if you reject that, there is no suitable replacement that can completely facilitate both spiritual development and the conditioned needs. Therefore, Krishna gave the Varnashram system. So when we see it as Krishna has given it, right? When we accept that how Krishna has given it, that it's sacrifice, then we can live in it and run it very nicely. But until we accept it like that, there's no question that Malechas and Yamanas can organize Varnashram. You know? basically most of who I've come across don't even know what a relationship is in the first place. They know what a perversion of a relationship is, but they don't even know what the pure perversion of spiritual relationship is. Proper relationship between husband and wife, parents and children, brothers and sisters, friends, you know, well-wishers, they don't know. So how are they going to institute something that's based totally on relationship? Not on pranamoy, not on anamoy, but on manamoy. Not possible. Because they haven't experienced it, they reject it. Those who have experienced it never reject it. I have not come across a person who knows what relationship is, has tasted it at some point in their material life, that rejects the varnashram. And those that I find that reject it, and the more strong, they're the ones that the most cannot understand what is the proper relationships. They don't know. They've never experienced it. So therefore, we have to approach it not because we come from such nice cultured families, you know, or born into very nice aristocratic, you know, God-conscious, you know, Vedic families. And so therefore, it becomes very natural to us. Like that. You know, we come, you know, it's not that when we see someone else as being hurt or that, and, you know, it's like in India, someone has a little problem or falls over, the whole crowd around them immediately turns their attention to help that person. But we come from a culture, at least I can speak for myself, comes from a culture, someone can be laying half dead in the street, and everyone on both sides of the street are just going to walk by. Why? I don't want to get involved. So now, that culture, how is it going to understand varnashram, which is based on relationship? So, therefore, we have to approach it how Krishna says here, is understand it as, this, he's not speaking Dharma Shastra here, that'll be understood by, you know, someone born in such families. He's starting off with the philosophy. This is sacrifice. That understanding this is sacrifice, that means then anyone accepting that can apply it. Because you're not attached to results anyway. Right? I don't want to do a certain kind of work or get stuck in a certain position because of the results that I'm going to get from it. Or lack of results. You know, whatever I have my identity as. So therefore, it's very difficult. But if I'm not attached to results, it doesn't matter anyway. I have my nature, whatever's my nature, I engage that bus. What do I care? If someone else is in charge and I'm not, or I end up being the one in charge, and you know, like that, then it doesn't matter. Because I'm doing it anyway for Krishna, detached from the results. So this is the, what Arjuna says, this is the art of work. Yes?
I understood from that quote what you said,
yes, the main process is chanting, but that is being supported by these other. In other words, the Bhagavad Marg is the main. But because of our conditioned nature, therefore, the Pancharatra Kaviji must be followed, and the Varnashram must be followed. Because chanting is the main, but we can take full advantage of the chanting process on the Brahma-Bhuta stage. But from the Madhyama stage, that's the clearing stage, then the advancement is very quick. Vishwanath gives the example of the clearing stage. Why it's called clearing is because it's like a storm blowing away leaves. And when a storm comes in, all the leaves just fly and go. Otherwise, they're there and you have to come up, pick them up a few at a time or rake them up. Or, you know, it's not, it's slow. But the clearing stage means then, like a storm, just all these and not everything's just blown away. It's just doesn't remain. So it goes very quick. Yes.
The Sakama and the pill?
Nishkama.
You know, they're both performing sacrifices in the context of what you were just speaking about. You've got like for an institution, you've got to have everyone work together. So how are they actually going to agree? Because the Sakama is performing, it's my sacrifice, so I'm seeing like this. So.
How do you get the peaceful working between Sakam and Nishkam karma yogis?
Because you mentioned how that those persons who may be a little attached, you shouldn't unsettle their minds. You should encourage them.
Yes.
But so how does that? How are you going to do it?
Besides misunderstanding the platform of sacrifice. This is actually where the main problem comes in. Because then when you bring into this, you have the mission, Lord Chaitanya's mission, Krishna's mission, to serve Krishna and go back to Godhead. So that's anyone who has accepted the bona fide spiritual master, accepted the bona fide shastras associating with devotees, is within that mission. And they're trying to in some way help that mission, either themselves become advanced, helping in some way or another. Now the difference comes here but now that's the overall mission. But then within that you have an institution. Means there's the broad institution, meaning the instructions and the support in that way, the spiritual support. But then also the institution has you know, financial and other liabilities that it must have. But it can only have those for those who are fully situated within that. So those within that have to be nishkam. Like that. And those who are sakam, they should be outside of that. You understand? In other words, you have two aspects of the same thing. You have ISKCON as a legal entity, you know, that you can take to court and you can do all kinds of things with, and you can you know, check their books. You know, like that. You know, they're accounting books and see if you still get tax exemption and registration and all that. So those persons that were within that are the society is legally bound to. Those have to be nishkam, because that is your core element, and that means your various living, the mission itself then has to take care of them. And it can only do that if they're setting that proper example. And if Sakam, then that means he has his own priorities and all that. You know, he's putting his priorities on which is more, you know, on which Krishna conscious elements more or less, and which of his material desires more or less. That they have to get themselves, because when you bring in Sakam, they're still keeping some of that, they're the doer. So they get the results of their thing. So they get the results, but they get the reactions. So that has to be separated. So the institution can't take responsibility for their material maintenance and desires. But as far as preaching, cultivating, encouraging, giving facilities to render service, that is fully there. Anyone can come to this temple and take me and do service and this and that. But when it comes to managing the temple, you should leave it to those who are within the institution. It means as a legal entity. Advice can be there, especially if you want to do some activity, you want to build something. So then you have some devotee who lives outside the temple and he's very expert at construction. You naturally, if you're intelligent, take their advice. But you don't finance his business and you can't be held liable for this or that, or if, you know, he cheats on his taxes, the society can't be held liable. Okay, so it comes to a very fine point. One has to understand the difference between the institution as a legal entity, and the institution as the instruction and desire of you know, Srila Prabhupada and the previous acharyas. Everybody is in the as a mission. You know, the institution. Institution means there's some organization. You know, but as a legal entity, that's another thing. So that has to be very, very clear. That has to be very clear. So it just means. But the point is because it's all sacrifice. The duties are being done as a sacrifice to Krishna. It's all transcendental. Therefore, also the points of all institutions aren't spiritual. That's nonsense. Because if that's true, then a marriage can never be spiritual, because that's also an institution. You know? Parents and children relationship can never be spiritual. It's an institution. You know? Like that. And everybody's following institution. Persons who say there's institution, this, that, everyone's following. You know, just so you drive your car down the proper side of the street is part of an institution. So it's just misuse of words for, you know, one's own doubts, one's own misgivings. One has to understand this. So the point is here he's recommending to Arjuna that he is perform. He's a grihastha. He's a kshatriya. Nishkam karma. So such a person can situate themselves in, be situated in the temple, if they can adjust with whatever facilities and all that is there, or they can live without the temple and still be fully part of the scene. Just they take care of themselves. Now, traditionally, grihasthas would take care of themselves. You know, especially Brahmin, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas. They would take care of themselves. But Prabhupada has arranged, since the especially in the West, you don't have a supporting culture outside the temple. Therefore, basically anybody needed to move into the temple. But once communities, farm communities that were established, then you could have both. You could have what the temple is bound to maintain, and then what the individuals maintain. Like that. So that just develops with time. But it needs, so the Nishkam Karma Yogi, who is a grihastha, can either be in the temple, dependent on the temple, or out of the temple. But in either case, they are not attached to the fruits of action. Like that in either case. But those who are attached to the fruits of action have to be outside the temple. Because the mood is different. That has to be said. Is that anything?
Maya doesn't give it gesture that we cannot take. But what does it mean, throwing, Maya's throwing potency? What does that mean?
She covers first. She covers first, then once you're covered, you agree to it, then she throws. She doesn't throw you first. Otherwise, if she takes a human and throws him into the body of a pig, it's going to be real hard to digest. So she covers first. Then she puts, and then there's no problem. So she first has to cover you. Then once you've been covered, then she throws. So you generally see that comes first, is that the person becomes bewildered first, changes their values and direction. Then only she can throw. But you've made that choice now. You've changed your direction. You've changed your desire. So now, then she acts on the desire. All she's doing is fulfilling that desire. And so she comes up and is like, you know, you sure you don't want this? You don't want some wealth, some women, some followers, some position, some fame? She keeps giving. And then when you take it, then she throws it. You know, she keeps offering it. And as soon as you reach out your hand and grab it, then she just pulls on it. You know,
she just throws it. But if you don't take it, she can't throw you. Because she is just doing what the Lord sanctions, and your desire is to serve the Lord. So the Lord is sanctioning her arrangements for you to serve. Right? And at the same time, those situations that will be both beneficial for our service and for our purification. So there may be situations which we may not find, you know, that in our opinion aren't great for our service, but our service had reached a point we can't go any further because we're not pure enough. So then those arrangements are there to purify us. We see here, the Brahma Bhuta person, Krishna is saying, you know, success or failure, fame or infamy. That means there may be situations in which an advanced person finds himself in a position of infamy or failure. And if they're not disturbed by that, then this is what Krishna is talking about. And if they are, then they have to work on that. They have to recognize that I have a problem. I have to correct this.
Somebody attains Krishna prayer, that's very wonderful. But if they don't, still they're nicely situated and living properly. But he said, you, in your society, you seem to emphasize Krishna prayer above all else, and you say anything less than that is useless. So he said, I observe that when, you know, you don't get it, you don't make it, then some of your devotees, then they throw everything away. It's like, I couldn't get it better at all. And then they kind of plunge back into a hedonistic lifestyle where you said, with us, if it's not attained, it's still, you know, orderly, reasonable, something living is there because we're trained up in school and on
that. It's a good point they're making. Same time as the weakness goes, is that was Ramanuja sees what is, we have to also understand the purpose of Ramanuja's preaching, is that due to the misuse of the Vedic culture, then Buddha had removed the Vedic culture. And Shankaracharya and had to take them away. It means they're misusing the Vedas. So that means you have to take them away from the Vedas. So you have to give something to replace it with. So some non-Vedic, some kind of philosophy you have to give. And at the same time is a different set of cultural rules. So now when Shankaracharya comes, his business was to reintroduce the Vedic culture. But you can't change both the Vedic, change both the culture and the philosophy so quickly. So he introduced the culture first. That was his business. Then Ramanuja comes, now he introduces the proper philosophy. But at least, what's his name? Shankara had changed it from being non-Vedic concept of impersonal, or in other words, voidism, to Vedic, which means Brahman. So he changed it from void to Brahman. He did that. So at least it brought it within the first stage in the Vedic spiritual and transcendental understanding. Though, because the people were not of, you know, good enough caliber, he could only introduce it not even on a full, proper, impersonal level. The Mayavada is actually not fully, it's still material, it's not spiritual. Ramanuja comes to, because he didn't come for the purpose to establish people going for Brahmavada realization. Especially in this age, it's not going to be very possible. Then, because Krishna is not recommending it.
Arjuna is asking, which is better, renunciation or work? So then, Brahmavad, the path of that means renunciation. And in this age, it's not going to come very easily. So then we see that he introduced the Vaishnav flavor. But it's coming writing in on that of the importance of the Vedic culture. But Krishna here is actually giving even a nicer balance than that, is that the culture is the sacrifice, so it is the service. While for them, there's the varnashram and then there's the service. But what's actually being given is the combination. So devotees, if they haven't understood this or have projected this to others, so that person's understanding of what is actually our presentation is not fully correct. Because we say is you're going to attain to that platform of bhakti through performance of prescribed duties, but with detachment and all that. And I don't see so much that the persons nowadays are professing their detachment and all this in their varnashram duties. They may be, but you don't necessarily see it like that. Though it's done quite well. Point is that one tries to get to the platform of pure goodness from the platform of goodness, so that if one falls back, one falls on goodness. That's his point. Well, for us, we're jumping from passion, ignorance, to pure goodness, and when you fall out of that, you fall back to passion and ignorance. So when but Krishna is recommending here that if you follow your prescribed duties without attachment and without ego, that is goodness. No matter what the work is, whatever nature it's controlled by. Let us say typically an artist's work is controlled by the mode of ignorance. Is this dependency upon the mind, the senses, and like that. But if you're doing that for Krishna, where's the ignorance? It's simply the modes of nature, that particular mode, ignorance may be the most influencing factor. Or if one's into astronomy and astrology, then those particular planets are the influencing factor. They're the ones carrying out the duty. But we ourselves, because we're not the body, not the mind intelligence, we're situated in goodness. Because we're doing it for Krishna, therefore it becomes pure goodness. Without passion, ignorance is pure goodness. So that's devotional service, that's the definition. So that's what we're saying to do. This is what Krishna is recommending here. So it's a totally different thing. Is that performing the duty with that consciousness means whatever it is, whatever is in the Varnashram system, it's all pure goodness. So it's all devotional service. Of course, that depends upon realization. Means pure goodness means there's no attachment and there's no ignorance. So that's this Brahma-Bhuta platform that's being described. If there is some, little bit, just we're getting rid of it, then it's goodness. Because goodness means there's a little bit of passion and ignorance there. Material nature, nothing's pure. But if it's predominant, there's a lot of it, then that comes into the realm of sakam. Right? Nishkam means it's situated in minimum on the material. It's spiritual activity, but our consciousness still is affected by the mode of goodness. Because there's a little bit of passion and ignorance there. But sakam means is that we're doing our service for the results, or we are very proud of our abilities. And we think others are, you know, not so wonderful, because we're so wonderful. There's only so much place in this town ain't, this world ain't big enough for the both of us. You know? Like that is, I'm the best in this sense. I'm sorry, the spot's taken. Try the next planetary system, if you want. And even that didn't work, was it? That Vichitravirya, right? Is it Vichitravirya? Is it one of the brothers of Pandu? Pandu Dhritarashtra, it was Vichitravirya. Was it? Huh? Oh, Chitrangada. It was one of the sons.
This was Santanu's son. Yeah, that's right. Chitrangada. So he had the same name as the Gandharva, right? Gandharvas, they live, some yogin is away. But that wasn't enough for Chitrangada. You know, he couldn't stand that a human had the same name. So it's like, not even being in a different planetary system was good enough for Chitrangada. His ego was so big. So he had to come here and kill the human Chitrangada because already the name's been taken. So, that's, we may laugh, but it's going on. Like that. So this is what's being presented. This is the razor's edge. Like that. So we don't want to, Krishna's just saying, take that middle. Situate oneself there. So we don't overemphasize the varnashram, we don't emphasize the not following. It means we don't overemphasize the karma or emphasize the jnana, because we've seen description of both. We emphasize the perfect blend of the two, like that, and according to our realization. But if we overemphasize, then that means we're getting to sakam. Because we have a desire, more for jnana or more for karma, results. Otherwise, why you'd overemphasize, right? Like I'm cooking. I like things really sweet. I'll always put a little extra sugar. If someone else doesn't, they'll put a little less in the same preparation. So, because of my attachments, I'll overemphasize karma again. But nishkam karma means you balance it. It's not overdone. Or sakam means I overbalance. So I would say that by the sounds of it, then what is being followed, though I don't think that's what Ramanuja is talking, but it's probably what goes on today, is it's like they're following sakam and then practicing devotional service. And then if they can elevate themselves to nishkam and all that, because there's an interesting difference. It's like you'll find also, as I find, it's very interesting, is that many times devotees would be in South India and they'd be, lecturing at a big hall. South Indians love to come to lectures. They can sit there for hours and listen to philosophy. Well, I generally find in North India, it's after 20 minutes you got to do a little bhajan or something. All the big orators, they who preach in the North, they speak a little and when they start to see people nod, then I go, and then everybody wakes up and then they start speaking again and they fall asleep, they go into a little lila and come back, and when they fall asleep, another kirtan, like that. But in South, they can sit there for hours and listen to philosophy. So then, while they're talking, then many times, because it's one of our main shlokas, we'll always preach the Sarva Dharmam Parityajam Amekam Sharanam Raja. So then, after the lecture, then some of the Sri Vaishnavas will come up and say, you shouldn't say this publicly, this verse. Like that, this is very secret, rahasya. Because for them, that is the stage when they actually seriously just take up devotional service and basically give up all the family life. Or in other words, for them it's kind of like vanaprastha. Then it's called prapatti, where you just surrender to just performing sadhana. Where the sadhana becomes your main thing. And you give up, all the grihastha duties and all that. So at that point, then the secret mantra is sarva dharmam parityaja. So for them it's like that's like you're getting very close to the end of devotional service. And it's interesting for us, we'll use that to get somebody off the street into devotional service. We start with sarva dharmam parityaja. That's we say like that. That's where we start. Is that you give up all this nonsense that you're doing and now just do the activities for Krishna. So there is also a difference in just where we're beginning the whole process. So that will make. But the point's well taken is that we haven't accepted our culture. Also, we do have a culture. Krishna is explaining it very nicely here. We're not accepting it. Like that.
I had the impression that hadn't come across Krishna consciousness that well presented. So that was more or less his impression of what he presented, Krishna presented. decisions, you know, the diversion, the real thing. But he was pointing out that for them, it's once good practically rare, very rare to achieve that Krishna prayer. But if they got into a sour grapes mood, oh, I couldn't get it, so let me just go out and enjoy it. That would also be very rare.
Yeah.
Because they're habituated to living a very orderly life within the realm of dharma and varnashram.
In other words, the beginning of the Gita. And Prapati is the end of the Gita. So we start with the end. The beginning, Arjuna is saying, you know, running the house nicely, the families nicely, and if we have this war, it'll all be messed up. And Krishna is saying, you don't understand. So he thinks, oh, you mean I should give all this up? No, he's saying, you do all that, but you just do it for Krishna, for his satisfaction. That's the fine. Frankly. You know, so even up to here, you know, by Krishna's arrangement, even Arjuna hasn't understood it. We can see as we're going through, Krishna's only saying the same point over and over again. Just in different angles, uses different words, brings in a different angle of it, just like a tadvidi pranipatena, that you approach a spiritual master. In the purport, then Prabhupada uses submission or surrender. And in other places, then he'll say, one must have the desire to know, to understand. Human life, tatato brahma jigyasa. It's all the same thing. Pranipata is that. You have the interest to learn. So what do? You approach somebody. And when you approach, you are submissive to them. So it's all the same. So you can bring out these different qualities because they each kind of have a different flavor, though it's the same thing. You know, the first thing one establishes is that there's something there that you want to go for. So I may talk about what is the goal, this, that, and then you want it. So I've established that. Then once that, then, he says, then you approach somebody. Now approach the spiritual master. Hear from them. Render service. You know, like that. Then I'll approach. Like that. Then you must submissively inquire. So that's the next stage. So he just takes one through. So one goes on the other. So many times you see the same things being said just from bringing out a different point or a different aspect, emphasizing one side more or less. But up to now we see we're only talking this thing of doing your duty without attachment, in knowledge, for Krishna. Like that. And again and again and again and again it comes up.
It's interesting, Maharaj, in Shivaram Maharaj's book on Srila Prabhupada's purpose, he mentions that some of these Gita commentators, they criticize Prabhupada about being overly simplistic in bringing everything always back to devotional service. And actually, that's what Krishna is doing.
Yeah.
So the word jugglers, they may pull so many myriad of other meanings out of these instructions of Krishna. But anyone intelligent actually sees Krishna is coming back always to the same point, the absolute point of devotional service. But they criticize, oh no, this is overly simplistic when you're always pulling out this point of devotion. But Krishna is actually doing it. Because they habituated to this word jugglery, then, oh well, he could have been saying this, he could have been really meaning that, insinuating. That's a fact that actually Krishna again and again is bringing out this example. Prabhupada was a perfectly exemplifying that. But we see Shivaramaj mentions how much hostility is there out there of these commentators. Oh, well, this is overly simplistic.
Because they don't want conclusion. Can conclusion means I have to do. If it's in the realm of speculation, I can go on and on and on and on, and I'm not bound. I don't have to, therefore, do something. But as soon as you come to conclusion, it's you have to do this. You want this result, you have to do it like this. Then they feel restricted, and they don't want restriction. You know, they just don't want to be restricted, not at least the mind. So they don't want it to be. So let's say it's oversimplistic, like that. I was explaining to someone also just on another, you know, just example of that.
explaining to someone who is, I think, in the university they teach mathematics. And so you, in university you get into, you know, high level of math and that. It means arithmetic you'll consider as very basic, and you're into very high level stuff. So the Vedic system of math is so basically advanced that it's so simple it reduces everything down to addition. If you know how to do addition nicely, you can do the whole system, because you can do the whole thing in your head. So I was explaining to the person wasn't interested because it became so simple. And he wanted something complicated, and he really thought he's really working out, and he's very advanced because he's doing it, and he can then be better than others. But if it just turns down to that, and even a kid can do it, then he doesn't want to be part of it, because it's just, you know, it's just too conclusive and too simple and just direct. So the difficulty comes is, since time immemorial, we have been doing karma, jnana, or yoga. They've never been mixed. One or the other. And we can understand one or the other easily. You know, because the externals go along with the material desire. So you have material desire for facility, and you see that the person has some facility, you know, has facilities, absorbing himself, he has that desire, he's allowed facility. You know, or you see someone as he's austere and he's doing his penances, or you see the person, they're detached and they're doing, right? Still running. So like that, and it's very clear. So it's easy. You can see the outside, and so therefore, by inference, you can understand the inside. And if one is trained, one can even see the qualities by their activities and all that. And you can see that the mood and their understanding matches the external, because you're only dealing with one very straight thing. So it becomes the problem here is Krishna's mixing them all three. Is you've been doing karma, jnana, and yoga for yourself for since time immemorial. Now you're going to do karma, jnana, and yoga all at once for Krishna. So this is where the problem comes. This is like Arjuna. Well, if you're saying do activity, but you're saying use the intelligence and renounce, and you can't fit together. Therefore, you have a grihastha who has all his facilities in that, but he's detached. He knows it's for Krishna. And there, and you have a sannyasi who's, you know, driving around in a Jaguar. Because it's all being done for Krishna. It facilitates the service that's done. And therefore, it can't be understood. People just don't understand, because it's just too subtle. Because you're doing two things at once. You know? That was also Madhu's point. Where he felt Ramanuja, it was too close to the Mayavad philosophy, purified oneness. You know, we're one in purpose with the Lord. So we always try to bring ourselves in line with the what Krishna, what the Lord wants. So he just made it very clear. The people, even after Ramanuja preached, then, you know, he established Vaishnavism very nicely, but he didn't like strongly eradicate impersonalism. So then Madhu comes along and just makes it very clear. There's two, bas, you know, end of conversation. You accept or you don't. So it's just that he chose that path because it was very clear. And then he could go out there and just, you know, fight. Like that. So when you get into these subtleties, it becomes difficult. So that's the problem. What comes is that we're talking about doing practicing Varnashram as a culture, but without the attachment for it. It's just some social structure in which our mind and senses can be engaged. Because we have to engage them. That's all. They're there. We're conditioned by them. They still exist. So we have to engage them. But we're doing it without the attachment. So it's like you'll find those who get right into the Varnashram and forget about the sacrifice side of it and the lack of attachment. And you get the others who get right into the you know, other aspects, philosophical side, and can understand the Varnashram. But Krishna is saying both are together. Prabhupada is saying both are.
So that becomes the difficulty, just accepting this point. I mean, it's a simple point. You only make it's going to be said in one verse. And it's been said up to now at least 10, 15 times. All these little sections, you'll see generally the conclusion of each little section says that point. So when you're free from doubts, then for that one point determination, you know this is what I do. I do my service to Krishna Bhas.
When Krishna speaks of sacrifice, everything is a sacrifice actually, you know. So one man works very hard and he does abdominal activities, but it takes a great deal of sacrifice and austerity. The activities are abominable what he's doing. So Krishna society and the enjoyable sacrifices. So again, also the sacrifices that some sinful person is performing or
no, he's given one of the sacrifices. Means the
Vedic.
It means, yeah, the Vedic ones. The other ones are not. That's just animal life. That's sacrifice in the mode of ignorance. You see, all these other ones are sacrifice in the mode of goodness. That is because Krishna is in pure goodness. So the sacrifice is in goodness, and then from there, if you connect it to Krishna, it comes to pure goodness. But he is the working principle there. He is the sacrificer, what is being offered, the mantra, the receiver of all that, you know. It comes up later, I think in the middle six chapters when Krishna describes his offerings, when this comes up. Then you see that how he is sacrificed. But just the motive, passion, ignorance is not. These are all carried out by, you know, the expansion, the transformations, basically Maya, Durga and Shiva, you know, as they start to expand into the more and more ghastly forms. Like that.
So actually Krishna is just speaking to civilized people.
Yes. It means he's starting from here. See, it's like you find, means religion is being spoken for the level of the person that you're at. So here Arjuna is performing his prescribed duties. He's following Varnashram. But now Krishna is taking him from Varnashram to transcendental. You know? By taking Manamoy, which is called Jnanamoy, and Vijnanamoy, which is understanding we're not the body, and combining the two. Then one can come to the platform. Then with that understanding, you purify yourself, you come to the platform, because you purify both of those, the karma and the jnana, and you come to the platform of devotion. So you're taking karma and moksha and combining them, but doing it for Krishna, without desire for the result. If you desire the result, you're going to get a karmic, or you're going to get a result of karma, which is artha and kama, or you're going to get a result of moksha, which is brahman. But we don't want that. So we combine the dharma and the moksha without the desire, but both of those are elevating. And then that elevates us. We do it for Krishna, so it's accepted as devotional service, but it elevates it to the point where we come to pure unalloyed devotional service. So then we don't need to perform those anymore. We're beyond having to perform them. The conditioned nature is dissolved. Then it becomes. Is that? Speak a little louder.
When we do Nishkama Karma Yoga for Krishna, that is pure.
If our understanding and everything is pure, yes. You won't see the difference. See, devotional service means it's the mood, it's not what's done. Right? I can pick up this table and move it to the other side of the room. I can do it for myself. I can do it for Krishna. So it's not the movement of the table. It's my consciousness. So when I have devotion, then I'm doing it just to please Krishna. Like you see, Arjuna fights just to please Krishna. He's not even doing it because it's his duty to do. He's just doing it because it pleases Krishna. In other words, it transforms from doing it because you're supposed to do it, but for Krishna, to I'm doing it just because it pleases Krishna. Right? It goes the other way. I do this because I'm supposed to do it. It will please Krishna.
The other is, I want to please Krishna. I do this. So it's just the platform of where you're situated. So, in other words, it's the preliminary stage of the devotional service. And that is accepted as devotional service. The sadhana is also counted as part of devotional service. But technically it means when you can stand on that devotion alone. You don't need the support of the material activities. Understand? Nishkam karma means I need the support of the material engagements. It means engaging in duties and knowledge because I'm still conditioned. There's still attachment for the mind, the senses, and the intelligence. So I engage those in the Lord's service. Because of doing that, they become connected with the Lord, they become spiritual. Therefore, it's devotional service. But I still need that support. Well, when we're talking in here about bhakti, then that means we don't need that support anymore. It's after Brahma-bhuta. It's after the Brahma-bhuta platform. Like that. But when Prabhupada's saying devotional service, he means from the beginning of engaging your activities in Krishna's service. He says action in karma yoga, action in Krishna consciousness. So it's the same. It's the same. But you see the difference? It's a subtle difference. It means when we're in the beginning stages, you don't have to understand the difference so much. We just know that there is higher platform where there will be no material desire, there will be total detachment from these things. We will see things in the proper way. We will see the body and the activities as separate from us. And we will have pure love for Krishna. But where we start now, that is devotional service. And as we advance, then we can start to see the fine points, you know. It's like when you start anything, you start with the basic elements and get you working within it. You know, if the first day you go to grade school, and they're giving you 1, 2, 3, 4, and then they start talking about quantum mechanics. It's going to be tough for you. They just tell you, just do this. It's all part of math. And because you do it, just with time you get there. Right? But you're still going to be doing, still the math is there, the same numbers are there, the same thing. You're still going to be doing activities. If you're here, you do it to set example. If you're in the spiritual world, you're also doing it. Right? Krishna still invites Maru Mangal to his house to eat because he's a Brahmin. Right? Maru Mangal's a Brahmin and Krishna's a Vaishya, and Vaishyas invite Brahmins to the house to eat. It's their duty to feed the Brahmins. Right? Maru Mangal says, if you give me a ladu, then I'll give you blessings. Right? So Krishna gives him a ladu. Like that. When Radharani goes to the to worship the sun god at the temple, she looks for a Brahmin to do the worship for her. Right? Because they're Vaishyas, they don't do the worship, and she's a girl. So she gets some, nice, Brahmin boy to do the worship for her. Which happens to be Krishna, dressed up as a Brahmin. But, in other words, the culture is there. But it's just as a medium through which to express the love for Krishna. So it's not dependent upon it. It's not restricted by it. While here, then we're restricted by it because we have a conditioned nature. So it's rules and regulations. We have to follow to purify ourselves. There they're not doing it to purify themselves. Right? There it's just mediums of expression of love. Like that. Else. And here? Yes? Sorry. Bhagavad Gita ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samavita Bhakti Bhindra ki, Chaitanya Gaura Prabhupada ki.